The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Okay, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Eric is indisposed at the moment.
I'm afraid he's been having GI problems and uncomfortable bloating.
But I'm sure he'll be out in a jiff.
Oh, here he is now.
Looking pale and shaken. Oh, you okay, little buddy?
The Eric Metaxas Show.
Hey, folks, this is what we call the Eric Metaxas Show. In this hour, I'm talking to Brian Kilmeade of Fox and Friends. We thought we'd hear from the conservative point of view just to see what those crazy people are thinking. And in this hour, we're hearing from my, well, actually in this segment only, we're hearing from my left-wing friend, the radical, almost communist, I'm not sure, John Zmierak. John, welcome back.
Thanks, Eric. You know, I'm the most liberal person in the room, I leave that room.
You speak for all of us, John. But listen, you write articles at The Stream every day, and you wrote another article about David French, and he recently wrote an article saying that basically saying that what I said in our forum in Nashville, he likened it to it basically inciting violence or on the edge of inciting violence. And I can't even respond because it makes me so upset. So I know that you wrote a response. So I thought maybe I'll just talk to you about it rather than responding.
Yeah, I read it and I skimmed it, to be honest. It's David French has not said one new thing since the spring of 2016, and he's not said one old thing in a new or an interesting way. He is part of the cabal of neocon, invade the world, invite the world globalists that were in control of the Republican Party from about 1996 through 2016. And what they did, they existed to serve large corporations, military contractors, gung-ho foreign interventionists, and occasionally throw Christians a couple of scraps from the table, maybe a bone here and a crumb there. And the Christians, the social conservatives, we were begging for scraps, and we didn't have much of a choice. We had to vote for John McCain and Mitt Romney because the alternative was always worse. So yeah. Essentially, Christian voters were in the same position that black voters are in the Democratic Party.
Yes.
Where else are you going to go, huh?
Right,
you want
right.
to scrap? Say thank you.
Right.
Sit up.
That's basically what I have said. I guess the thing that's a little bit baffling about David French is that he is a Christian, an evangelical Christian. He's pro-life
first.
So
this is important. He is a neocon first and a Christian second. And if that weren't true, he would have been screaming about the fact that George W. Bush left the Christians of Iraq completely abandoned when he was commander in chief and our troops were all over the country. Between that and then again under Obama, but it didn't change under Obama. So Bush, Obama, one thing they agreed on was that 750,000 Christians who'd been in Iraq since the days of the apostles, one of the oldest churches on earth, could be ethnically cleansed, bulldozed out of existence, tens of thousands killed and raped, 750,000 out of 1 million driven out of the country while our troops stood there because they were ordered not to do anything. So I'm sorry, David French is a neocon with a spray of Christian scent, you know, the way you might do an aroma in a room. Look, he is saying that we are obsessed with Trump and we vitiate our Christian witness. I'm sorry, Donald Trump never got 1 million Christians ethnic, subjected to ethnic cleansing and rape and killing. he said a few gross things on the Howard Stern show. And David French takes to his fainting couch and clutches his pearls and wonders about the winsomeness of our witness because Donald Trump said something vulgar. And it's just, I think it might be some false.
People should go to stream.org and read your piece because it's hilarious. You got some lines in there that are very, very funny. But
talk about the sorority of churchy righteous moralists from which French has blackballed you. And the name for that sorority is, of course, Beta Dogma Stigma. you don't want to go to their parties anyway. They serve nothing but White Claw and Girl Scout cookies. You are made a much
White
better choice.
White Claw and Girl Scout cookies. What a crummy sorority. I don't want any part of that. Well, you know, I'll be talking to Brian Kilmeade about this in a couple of minutes. But John, let me just say that what has happened recently, in other words, the revelations that we've all known. I mean, anybody paying attention has known what was going on. But to finally have the proof now of what former President Obama was willing to countenance.
That's right.
It is so horrifying. It is essentially a coup. It's the worst thing in the world. But here's my point. The Never Trumpers, it seems to me now, must at least come out to condemn this. They haven't done that.
They were part of it, Eric. They were part of it. Senator John McCain was one of the people involved in funneling that fake dossier with Russian disinformation and disgusting pornographic lies. He funneled it to the FBI. The neocons cared more about controlling the Xerox machines at the Republican Party than they did about the fate of America. And those who are still Never Trumpers, that's all they care about. They want to be the Washington generals who go on the court and lose gracefully and help the Globetrotters look good. That is the job of the Republican Party, according to these people. God forbid you win. God forbid you look out for blue-collar workers or persecuted Christians abroad or really look out for the unborn or try to protect America's gun rights. Those things were all just, you know, crumbs that you were supposed to throw the social conservative base so they would keep marching out and voting for open borders, big military budgets, exciting new war projects. Don't forget that McCain and at the time Rubio and Romney wanted the U.S. to confront Russia and threaten to shoot down Russian planes in order to install in power in Syria Al-Qaeda, the same people who blew up the World Trade Center on 9/11. I think you and I were both there. The Syrian rebels, the so-called moderate rebels, never existed. There were a few dozen people in conference rooms. Al-Qaeda was the leading force that would have taken control of Syria and ethnically cleansed another million Christians. And then these people like David French, could have gone on little men's leadership workouts, you know, in retreats in the woods and talked about the virtue of Christian masculinity while fathers of families couldn't protect their children and their wives from jihadists taking over their country with American help. That's what the neocons were about, and they were in on this. You didn't hear the Never Trumpers criticizing the persecution of General Flynn. You didn't hear them talking about the deep state coup. They were part of the deep state coup.
Well, that's the horror. That's the horror. I mean, what McCain did, you know, the vote making it impossible for Trump to repeal Obamacare, I thought to myself, what a legacy. What a sad, sad legacy. This is a man who was a hero. He was tortured for his country. And at the end of his life, to become so bitter against Trump that he
pathetic.
Would...
You know, it reminds me of Marshal Petain was genuinely a French hero in World War I. But in World War II, he wanted to surrender and collaborate, and he died in disgrace. And as far as I'm concerned, that's where McCain fell out.
It really is bizarre. Look, we could say the same thing, of course, about Romney. I mean, this is someone that I voted for, but in both cases... And I guess in those cases, the only case you can make for voting for them is that the Supreme Court picks would have been different than Hillary's or Obama's.
I'm not convinced they would have been all that different. I think we would have gotten pro-business, pro-choicers, people like Anthony Kennedy.
Unbelievable. John, I'm sorry we're out of time. We're going to have you back on tomorrow. Folks, let me remind you, very, very important, we're doing a fundraiser with Angel Tree. These are the folks at Prison Fellowship who are sending care packages to the children of incarcerated people, the children of prisoners. If possible, we're going to send these kids to summer camp. It doesn't look good right now that we can send them to summer camp, but if possible, we're going to do that. But if we can't send the summer camp, we're sending them care packages, wonderful care packages. I adjure you in the name of Christ Jesus, please go to MetaxasTalk.com. You will see the banner there. Whatever you give will enter you in the grand prize drawing. Albin and I are very excited about this. MetaxasTalk.com. We'll be right back with Brian Kilmeade. Don't go away.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire.
Okay, folks, as promised, Brian Kilmeade of Fox and Friends is my guest. Brian, where are you? I happen to be watching you on video right now. Look at you. You're someplace. You're not in a studio. You're someplace happy. Is that where you live?
Backyard. Yeah,
I knew it.
My backyard. At any moment, two Great Pyrenees could start barking. They bark at anything, so we'll just roll with it as if it's scheduled.
It'll be like the that Biden thing with the bird tweeting. Did you see that? Come on.
Yes. I'm not trying to be like Joe Biden. That's why it's a dog. It's going to be a dog situation, not a bird situation.
I think we like you. So if dogs bark, it'll just add to, you know, the way we feel about you. I want to talk to you about a couple of things, but can we talk about the Flynn situation? I can't even imagine that we're at a point in our country right now where we have proof of what seems to be a coup. What do you have to say? I mean, you've seen it all.
Well, I'll put it this way. I think he had a chance. I don't know if he had a chance in those 2 years when he was out of office, when he was out of the Obama administration, when he was promoting a book and he was around. I think he might have been a Fox News contributor at some point. He might as well have been. Anything military, we were calling Michael Flynn. And then when he got involved with the campaign, we watched it happen. I remember talking to Michael Flynn saying, you know, he's probably going to offer you a job. And he goes, listen, I got to make money. He goes, you think generals made a lot of money? He was kidding around. He really didn't want to go to the White House. He loved Trump, but he didn't want to go to the White House. And he also knew about the president's tweeting and the challenges that would have been involved in that. And I only hope that we get a chance to hear Michael Flynn's side of the Michael Flynn story. And I pray that Adam Schiff demands to see him front and center to explain himself, because you will never see such a one-sided decision, maybe Tyson Spinks in the 1990s, because he's been totally screwed over. And now for this judge to do what that judge did, he, worse than saying you're guilty, he put him into hyperspace. Now he can't get on with his life. He can't pay his bills. He can't write a book. He can't sign any type of contributorship deal. He can't move on with his life as a consultant, because nobody knows about his legal situation. It was just such an overreach. I've never seen more legal minds more outraged and yet surprised from when.
Now, this is the more recent thing. This is the more recent thing for people who aren't watching the news and aren't up on this. I mean, this happened obviously very, very recently. And it's kind of strange. You know, as far as I could tell, it's open and shut, right? The Justice Department says over. The case is over. So who is this judge, for people who know nothing about this? Who is this judge, and on what basis does he come out of the weeds and decide to, you know, almost go over the head of the attorney general? I just don't understand this.
Well, the last time we saw this judge, who was appointed by President Obama, he actually said that Michael Flynn committed treason, that he sold out his country, that he's anything but a patriot. Really? 33 years in the military? Killed Zarqawi? Was a major part of implementing David Petraeus' surge, has saved people in battle, was actually in on the invasion of Grenada. And he is telling, this judge is telling him he's not a patriot. Fantastic. So a heck of a leap, by the way. And then told him, I'm not deciding on your future. Now, I think it's personal. This judge is a 71-year-old guy who knew that what the attorney general did, doesn't want to accept the decision, I believe he's doing a delay game to make sure that once Trump loses, in his mind, Trump's going to lose, they'll get a new attorney general in, and he'll have to get a chance to sentence him like he really wants to.
It's unbelievable. Trump is not going to lose, so it's going to be very interesting. I mean, I guess I wonder if Trump wins, whether he would be able to reappoint Flynn. I mean, somebody said the other day that he should make him the head of the FBI, where he's going to, you know, he's going to clean house. I think he would. I think he would. I hope he would to some major position.
Not something that needs confirmation to a member of his staff. The other thing is, as you know, Eric, you don't make much money in the, you know, in proportion to what you can make in the private sector. After this, he's probably like, I have done with my government. But if Trump asked him, I don't know his mindset. I've exchanged some direct messages with him over the last 3 years, but lately nothing. And I just want to tell you, hold on to, if you hear that Michael Flynn has got to be testifying or speaking, hold on tight, because he's going to take the paint off the walls.
Well, look, we need that. We need that. We need to really, you know, clear the air in this country. What's gone on? I just have to say, as an American, I'm so sickened by this. You know, I don't want it to be true, but I've known for a long time. All you need to do is watch a little Sean Hannity. And, you know, you understand this has been going on. We've known about this. But to have it come out recently that the president of the United States, the former president, was involved in this, that he really did oversee this. It's like living in a banana republic. In America, we've never had anything like this. You know, nothing
the only
close.
Explanation I would say, this is what he could say. From the amount of evidence that I saw, I truly believe that Donald Trump made a deal with Vladimir Putin in order to overthrow our government. And this is the only thing I could have done. Number one, if he was doing that, call a press conference. Don't send 6'7" James Comey and Andy McCabe and a compromised Peter Strzok to go ahead and speak to Michael Flynn when they were still moving the furniture into the White House. So for him not to admit it, come out, Scott, in his words, scot-free, I really cannot wait for the release of Rick Grenell's unmasking information as it relates to John Brennan and others, stuff that he has to bring forward, hopefully in the next couple of days.
Yeah, this is it's exciting. I want to talk to you about something more positive, like the coronavirus pandemic we're going through right now. Liberties. Yeah, right. At least you get to be at home. Right. And I get to be at home and, you know, and we get to be around our families and things. But civil liberties are being threatened, or at least we're being challenged to think about what is the role of the state, what is the role of the government. And when you live in a blue state, like I assume you do and I do, it's a little strange when you have governors that are they're kind of out of touch with, let's say, you know, the way people in Texas understand freedom, because I do want to talk about the Alamo. People around this country in places like Texas, they understand what freedom is. They understand what the Second Amendment is. In a place like New York, if you live in near Chicago, these kinds of places are having to deal with leaders that don't understand this stuff. I live in the city. Mayor de Blasio obviously doesn't begin to understand, you know, what freedom is on the American model. We're living through strange times, Brian.
Yeah, when they tell you how long you can walk on the beach but not lay on the beach, when they say you can play golf but not tennis, when they say that you are allowed to go to Target but you're not allowed to go to a restaurant, you can't go to Dick's Sporting Goods but you can go to a pharmacy, and then they're not letting up because there's some pockets of infection. Meanwhile, you're leaving the nursing homes totally naked in every place except perhaps the success stories in Georgia, the success stories in Florida, the success story in South Carolina. There doesn't seem to be a push to open responsibly. There seems to be a push to suffocate irresponsibly. And how dare you ask or challenge? Look at what's going on in Pennsylvania. 20 counties stood up and goes, "You kidding me? I'm sitting here with almost no cases. We have no problems. We've contained the problems. We have plenty of room in the hospitals should things happen. You're acting like we're Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. We're not." And they say, "Well, tough. You're locked down until June." Really? You give me enough PPP money for about 6 weeks, it's just about out. Well, the second wave is 8 weeks, just about out. And then you told me not to fire anybody. That's just about done. You wasted all our time. You're not going to have a gym in Pennsylvania. You're not going to have a gym in New York. The math doesn't add up. They are sitting back saying, well, I'm doing the responsible thing. You have to have an offense and a defense. We need an offense. And we need help from the defense like Fauci and company to tell us how best to sanitize our buildings, sanitize our office space, sanitize the restaurants. Science has to work with us while at the same time they're working on therapies and vaccines. Right now, all we hear is don't stop, don't ask any questions.
It's amazing. And look, it goes fundamentally against who we are as a people. In America, we have always we've always been people that had liberty and we knew what to do with it. You know, this has never been Sweden. This has never been a totalitarian state. We just fundamentally behave in ways we govern ourselves. So this is just a strange, strange time. And I just wonder if the American people will push back, as I hope they do. I guess that's my concern.
We're seeing pockets, but I was stunned by this poll that a Pew poll showed that 68% of the people surveyed are more concerned about us moving too fast than too slow. Only 30 towards opening up our states. Only 36% said we're moving too slow. I don't know where these people are, these 7 out of 10 that think we're moving too fast.
Can you imagine?
Fast. Oh,
I have to say, I don't know. I think they work at CNN. We're going to be right back. I want to talk to you about your book, about the Alamo, folks. I'm talking to Brian Kilmeade. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Don't go away.
Christian bestselling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com.
Hey, folks, I'm back with Brian Kilmeade. We're going to talk about a happier topic. We're not going to talk about COVID. We're not going to talk about the Obama overreach and the coup. We're going to talk about something really positive, Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers. Brian, I just love that you're taking on these wonderful subjects. This gets to the very heart of what it means to be an American. I kind of think, you know, Texas is like the distilled version of America sometimes. And this is the story of Texas. So for folks who know nothing about it, tell us what do you cover in this book?
Well, and thanks for having me on for the hardback too, just a few months ago. So we decided to roll this out in the spring. No idea a pandemic was coming. I think, okay, nobody knew. And there's no book tour. So the chance to talk to you and your audience is great. What I wanted to do is after the War of 1812 and doing Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans, there was this guy sprinkled throughout the story who was Sam Houston, 6'5", big blue-eyed guy that was, like Jackson, lost his father young. And then, unlike Jackson, was an extremely lazy kid. And his brothers were fed up with him. His mom couldn't get him to work the farm. They couldn't get him to go to school. They bought a store. He wouldn't work in it. He finally lived with the Cherokee Indians. And then realizing, you know, he's getting to his later teens, had to make something of his life. He went out and joined the military. First, he tried to start a school. Then he joined the military. That's where he learned leadership. That's where he learned his potential. That's where he learned discipline. And that's where he learned to use his fearlessness and his aggression in battle. Battle of Horseshoe Bend happens. He gets shot right away, gets an arrow in the leg, gets two bullets in him. He quickly realizes as they give him up for dead, the courage is great, but it's got to be calculated. Jackson sees the way he fights. He goes, I love this guy. Mentors him the rest of his life. Made him congressman, governor, blew up his days in scandal. Wouldn't be a scandal today. As he makes his way through life, he goes back and forth with the Indians, got censured by Congress for beating up another lawmaker. And then finally, him and Jackson used to sit on his porch with James K. Polk and Buchanan and Martin Van Buren. And they used to actually agree with Jefferson on something, that the Texas came with the Louisiana Purchase. They had no right to take it to the Spanish. They were not challenged with it because we had so many other issues and so much more land to settle. But when Florida and Texas were up for doubt, they did a swap. You give me Florida, you can keep Texas with Spain, which drove Houston and Jackson and Madison and Jefferson nuts. Like, how could you give away a thing we already won, Florida?
Brian,
they were going to get it.
Forgive me for interrupting, but I'm just fascinated sometimes how much I don't know. I mean, as you tell this, I realize maybe I have a dim memory of this story, but it's just wonderful to kind of, you know, for people who have a dim memory of it or who never heard it, the idea that this was going to happen. I forgot about this. Tell us, take us back to this idea that Texas was up for grabs. I mean, it was purchased in what, 1803? Jefferson, I can't remember the exact year. I think it was 1803. It's part of the Louisiana Purchase. So how does it somehow, you know, go back into the column of maybe we can give it to Spain?
Well, a couple of things. You know, Spain had a presence. France had a presence. Britain had a presence. After the Revolutionary War, the goal was always, can we get these other powers out of here? You know, the British never left the Midwest. They would actually end up staying out west until we finally got them out of Oregon. And they ended up staying in their area of Canada, which is now Canada. But they did longitude and latitude. And they did the maps, which is amazing to me, without a drone or any type of map maker. But they go, you know, this is ours. Spain is there. They can't dispute every single thing that they want. They're a young country. So Spain takes it. But Spain can't populate it. People are scared to death of the Comanches. Mexico gets their independence. They take over the area. Spain is now out. Mexico is now a country. They can't populate it. So Moses Austin cuts a deal. He said, I got a bunch of Americans who want a new start. Can we come? What are the rules? He goes, yeah, we'll give you a plot of land. You settle it. You secure it. And for 10 years, no taxes, be a Catholic. And they go and they do it. And it thrives. It's better than anything that Mexico has. But when Santa Anna takes power, he's like, you're done with that. You answer to me. No more mayors, no more elections, no more due process. That's when the fighting happens. That's when Texas stands up for Texas. That's when they fight for independence. Sam Houston's the perfect guy at the perfect time to lead a bunch of determined but inexperienced men into battle against a standing army, which is European trained, led by Santa Anna, who knows his stuff. And Sam Houston, with all his experience, was able to shape the battlefield. And without giving the whole book away, in the Battle of San Jacinto, he wins the battle in 18 minutes. And then get Santa Anna to surrender Mexico instead of killing him. And it's instead of just learning about the Alamo, I wanted to bring it next one. Yep.
How does anybody win a battle in 18 minutes? That's like when Mike Tyson would take a guy out in 60 seconds. How do you win a battle in 18 minutes?
You're not going to believe it. Back then, if you didn't fight early, you didn't fight at all. And no one knew who was going to fight, when they were going to fight. They knew they were going to square off with each other after running away for 4 or 5 months. Because Houston knew he wasn't ready. When they finally do it, he gets up at around 10, has his war council meeting around 12, and around 2 goes, let's go. He leads the battle. But guess who had marched all night? The gist of the Mexican army. And guess who thought to themselves, well, since he's not fighting early, he's not going to fight at all, why don't we put our guns in a pile and get some rest? The Mexican army. So the U.S. mounts, led by Houston in front. He gets shot off his horse along the way, gets back on, gets shot again. And he goes and they hit an invasion. By the time they look up, the Americans are right, the Texans are right in their face, and it's a massacre. It lasts for 2 hours, but it really is done in 18 minutes. So instead of killing Santa Anna when they capture him the next day when he was trying to flee as a peasant, Sam Houston, bleeding from his leg, says, okay, get the paperwork. We're in your camp. They get it. I'll treat you like an officer, okay? Unlike the way you treated the people at the Alamo and Goliad, fine. sign over Texas, call off the reinforcements. He does both. They hold on to him for a few more months. Ironically, it was Jackson that convinced Houston and company to release him back to Mexico.
Hang on a second. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back. We'll get the rest of the story with Brian Kilmeade. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back, folks. One more segment with Brian Kilmeade. Brian, I just love the idea for anybody who's watching this on video, not just listening on radio, that you're not on the curvy couch. You're outside, obviously in your own backyard. This is such a bizarre time, but it's a good time to do interviews like this. So let's go back. Your book just came out in paperback. It's called Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers. For people who don't know this timeline, talk about, you know, what year was the Alamo? What year does your book take place? Help people understand, you know, nothing about the history of Texas and what happened.
So you got 1776, our revolution, 1783, the win, 1789, we get a president. And after a while, believe it or not, Americans were going, you know, the price is a little expensive here. And there's a lot of clickiness to the founding fathers. I want a fresh start. Whether you're running from the law, you're running from a bad marriage, you just lost all your money. These famous people were losing their money left and right. There was no security. There was no 401k. You couldn't invest in the stock market. So a lot of people fleeing from bankruptcy or bad marriages wanted a fresh start. And it was Moses Austin in around the 1820s would cut a deal with the Spanish. And it was Stephen F. Austin, after his dad died in his last wish, he goes, would you go ahead and fulfill this deal for me? And he does. Stephen F. Austin's a perfect guy. He's able to deal with all these different families and all their quarrels and get them together, check his ego, and everything's great. Until Santa Anna takes over and says, no more liberty, no more voting, no more elections. And you're talking about
what year
the 1830s. Around the 1830s, 1832.
But just so I understand this, so we had purchased this territory. So this territory belongs
1805.
To the United States. Yeah. Right. But so it belongs to the United States. So Santa Anna is, I mean, how does this, I'm just trying to understand what this looks like on paper. In other words, he kind of comes in under whose authority? Does the United States government care? Or is it just the people who live in Texas who care?
Mexico had it, Eric. Mexico had it. It was our belief that we never enforced that we came with the Louisiana Purchase. But leadership and John Quincy Adams, who was Secretary of State at the time, did a swap and just said, okay, we got Florida. We'll stop fighting about Florida because the Spanish thought they have that, as everybody knows. So you keep Mexico. So when the Spanish had it, they looked around and going, we don't have any people that want it. We don't have any people that want to live here. The Comanches are everywhere. They keep killing all our guys. So the Spain was like, we don't know what to do. So that's why when Moses Austin came down and said, I got Americans who want to live here. Can I do it? It's as almost if we went to a British-owned island and said, you can't populate it. What if I came here? What are the rules? So technically, we had it, but we never went after it hard. And the whole time, Jackson says, here's some money. Can I buy it? And they said, no. Here's some more money. Can I buy it? They said, no. So we tried to do it the right way. And then when they realized they actually possessed it and all the Americans were pouring in, the Mexico with this new country said, uh-oh, we're about to lose this place. I'm going to go drop the hammer and kill everybody we see that won't get in line. Hence the Alamo. They surround it. They squeeze it. And after 13 days and losing hundreds of guys, they kill everybody except the women. And then they go to Goliad and kill everybody. So they want to kill everybody until they all get in line. But Sam Houston's got this army. He's training them. He's going backwards, runaway scrape, they call it, until he can shape the battlefield and square off with Santa Anna head-to-head one time. Why one time? Win or lose, they knew there would be no rematch. Almost like the end of Rocky One.
How long between, you know, the Alamo and what we're talking about right now? How long?
Months.
So just months.
4 months. Yeah, just months. And they square off in this battle. And Santa Anna is ultimately confident. He knows Sam Houston's been running. He's got victory after victory. There's not a chance in the world he thinks he's going to lose. and they were sleeping, it would have been a great battle anyway, but they literally caught him napping. And he signed over Texas when they would, instead of killing him, and he said, he told his reinforcements to back off. Texas would become a country. They had already written the Declaration of Independence and their Constitution.
You said Sam Houston was able to kind of get the battle lines in, or to shape the battle in the way that he was comfortable with. And so what date are we talking about?
You're talking about, you have February 23rd to March 6th is the Alamo. 2 weeks later is when everyone gets killed. It lasted 13 days. And then you have Goliad 2 weeks later, March 27th. And then you have the end of April when the Battle of San Jacinto takes place. And they are on the move, burning towns the whole way in the runaway scrape. What they did, Santa Anna backed himself up into a body of water. He could only go forward. He didn't think it was a problem because he was so powerful and so much more experienced. And Houston had an escape route, plus he wanted to go forward. They knew how to attack. He knew how to attack. You know, he was in the War of 1812. This is, you know, 20 years later. He's got all these years of experience in. And when they do it, they even though they wanted to kill him, and a lot of these guys got killed for 2 hours, they just kept killing Mexican army members. For remember the Alamo? Remember Goliad was the theme. So after that, Sam Houston, bleeding from his leg, needing medical attention, still had the presence of mind not to go to kill him with his anger, which he would have done in his 20s, and instead cut a deal with him until dealt him like a prisoner of war. So, and that would turn over Texas, and he'd become the first president of Texas, the first governor of Texas, a senator of Texas. And what I added in the paperback was what he did with Lincoln to try to keep Texas out of the Confederacy. Unfortunately, he didn't fulfill the deal because he didn't want to turn on his own Texans. So that's pretty much this extraordinary life of a guy that outside Texas, not many people know about.
It is amazing. And I'm just happy with all you have going on that you're, you know, putting your efforts into telling the stories of American history. It just seems to me with everything we have going on right now, when you hear these stories of heroism, it's inspiring. What can I say? I didn't know this story before.
Great. And that's the thing. And even if you see that Texas woman who owns a salon, she stands up and says, wait a second, you're stopping me from earning a living. I will stand up and take you on. I will rip up the unjust law and I will take prison rather than give in. That is pretty much the Texas attitude that I discovered in looking it up. It wasn't just in the movies. It still exists today.
Well, listen, I'm just so grateful to you. Brian Kilmeade, God bless you. Thank you for the book. Thank you for coming on the program.
Go get him, Eric. Thanks so much. Continued success. See you soon.
I can't lie. No more of your darkness. All my pictures seem to fade to black and white.
Hey, folks, what a day. What a day on the Eric Metaxas Show. We got Brian Kilmeade. We got Zmirak. We're talking about Clarence Thomas. It's unbelievable. Speaking of unbelievable, I think that I'm either being shadow banned or something on Facebook. I cannot post on my normal Facebook page where I have like 80,000 followers on the Facebook page. And we have tried. I got tech people on it. So it's hard to communicate because a lot of people, get information from me from my regular Facebook page. So that being said, if you would go to my website, which is ericmetaxas.com, and sign up for my newsletter. Once a week, we send out a newsletter via email with all the information that we want to put on it, information that normally I would put on Facebook. But you just have to go to ericmetaxas.com, ericmetaxas.com. You'll see it. I hope you'll sign up for it because not being able to speak to you via Facebook is frustrating. Of course, there's Twitter. And also, Albin and Chris, last night, I hope you enjoyed the Not Allowed to Laugh conversation that I did on Facebook Live with Adam Carolla.
I'm still laughing. Ha ha ha.
I think we're gonna try to air that on this program next week. I just want to say that in case you missed it or you couldn't get it or whatever, we're gonna see if we can air it on the program this week, next week. And I should mention that the allergies are so bad, I'm not sure how to put sentences together. I know I sound foggy, and that's because I'm very foggy. It is unbelievable. Here in New York, I went for a run yesterday, and I just thought I need to like have a sinus rinse or something. This is like, it is so bad here. Forgive me for saying sinus rinse. It's a family program. Before we go, let me remind everyone, we're doing a fundraiser with Angel Tree. Folks, I'm begging you, please go to our radio website, metaxastalk.com. Click on the banner. There are kids all over America in every state whose parents are incarcerated. We send them to prison fellowship Angel Tree Camp. It's a wonderful camp every summer. This summer, a lot of them will not be able to go because of the shutdown, so we're sending them packages. We do need your help. I'm begging you, folks, go to metaxastalk.com. Give what you can. Get your kids involved. It's an extraordinary opportunity to help the children of prisoners. And that's at metaxastalk.com. And also, if you want to go to givingmasks.com/Eric, we're doing a thing with Giving Masks. They create masks. What do they call it? PPEs, personal yes. protection, mm-hmm. something, whatever. If you want really high quality masks, we say go to givingmasks.com. But if you put in givingmasks.com/Eric, whatever you get from them in terms of masks, they will donate the same number of masks to some folks on the front line in hospitals here in New York. So we want to encourage you to go to givingmasks.com/Eric. If you're only interested in high quality masks, givingmasks.com/Eric, but they will donate whatever you buy. They will donate masks to frontline workers. And Alvin, am I missing anything?
I don't think so. By the way, you're looking great today. The hair, the wig.
It's a wig. It's ironic that whenever the wig looks best, I look in my schedule book and it's like, it's time to have it steam cleaned again. And I kind of wonder, why do I spend the money?
I don't know. Because you have it.
Why do I spend the money? I think
the wig is triggering to millennials, by the way.
On the what?
Your wig triggers the millennials.
I know.
To piggyback on the No Safe Spaces.
It's a peruke. Well, anyway, I think we're out of time today. Have I ever sounded foggier? It's unbelievable. I hope I sound slightly less foggy tomorrow. Thanks for listening.